and talk about each other, why we're doing this show. I've been here for 8 years now behind this microphone, sometimes lately in town, sometimes not. And Deborah's been very much involved in the gay and lesbian community and also in the women's community and in a number of different things.
I have to sit here a moment and think, how did I get here? How did I end up doing a radio show on Tuesday night, lesbian and gay program on KPFT?
You happened to be available. That was one
thing.
Oh,
yeah.
You happened to be willing to do it also.
Well, I had started off a number of years ago occasionally as a guest on a woman's place, Clara Kern's program, which now precedes Waldenstein, because I was so involved with the feminist community, the National Organization for Women in particular, and usually was aware of different things going on or had commentary about different things that I had read or issues. And so I did that for a number of years, and then have always kind of hung out and done things at KPFT, volunteered for Breakthrough during marathons, and sometimes did things with that program. So it wasn't like I was a stranger that just stumbled in one night about a year ago.
Which does happen here, too.
Yeah, that does.
I sort of got involved when I moved to Houston 8.5 years ago, the day Kathy Whitmire got elected. Just a strange coincidence there, and thought, wow, what a wonderful city this is. And when I first moved to Houston, I didn't like it. I thought, you know, Houston is this real cold city that has all this glass and everything is brand new.
You meant cold in terms of?
Of the way the architecture was, that
the looks of
everything
the place
was just like thrown there, and, you know, there was no roots in the city. And then I moved to Montrose and found out that was just the opposite. There's some really neat places in Houston. And I started to slowly get involved in the community, and how I got involved in here is because of my background in radio. And I kept hearing
which
people...
Which is what?
Well, I'm an engineer in radio. I've been either an assistant chief engineer or chief engineer in for 10 years now, working in radio. And I just happened to stumble on the radio dial listening to Waldenstein. I kept hearing people like talk like way off mic and things like that. And
lots of static.
And things like that, yes. And so I decided to volunteer. I called up this person named Ray Hill. And thought,
I've heard of him.
Yes. Well, maybe, you know, all they need is a person who'd like to run these dials and things like that on the air. And as the way Ray Hill works, you never just get off that easy. But first, Ray was very protective of the show. And I understand that because I've been accused of being that, too. And because this is one of the few pieces of electronic media that the gay and lesbian community owns.
Well, it also becomes your child, your baby in a way. You're putting yourself on the line each week, and you feel kind of a responsibility, like you've been charged with this mission, and this is your mission if you choose to accept it. And we are very conscious, I mean, I'm aware that you are, and I know that I am, of the kinds of information that we bring on this program, the kind of role models we want to be. We want to understand about who our listening audience is so that we're reaching them. We want people to know about the different events and activities, but we also really want to get that message across about being a lesbian woman and a gay man who are very glad to be who we are and proud of our community.
I think one of the most important things that we need to stress is this is not the Deborah and Jack show.
Right.
This is not a show for us to talk about ourselves all the time, but sometimes we do have to do that to let people know what we go through in our daily lives about being an open gay or lesbian person. And not to necessarily say, well, you've got to do things the way we do, because I've certainly sacrificed a lot of things to do some of the things I do in the community, and that was my choice, that sometimes life hasn't been always easy. I've sacrificed some of my personal things, and I do that. That's just the way I'm not saying everybody else should do that. We decided that we could be open people and be on the microphone, and we've also sacrificed careers in some sense. I know you sacrificed a lot, Deborah, to work at Bering. You know, I know it didn't pay very well, but I know it was
especially since I no longer work there.
Yes. But and the fact is that there's times I'm sure it wasn't an easy job dealing with life and death matters all the time. and dealing with the church at the same time.
It was dealing with the church that was harder for me.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if for people who are familiar listeners, they know that what I did at Bering was work with the AIDS support group over there, which had been a very fine group, and I think under my direction of it, really was a very special place. And unfortunately, I was dismissed from my position there because someone didn't see quite eye to eye with me, and that someone was a person in authority. But it was a surprise dismissal, and very disappointing because I really loved being there. And working with AIDS, working with people who are living with AIDS, and in a way, I think we're all living with AIDS. Some of us just have it inside our bodies, and others of us have it because we care about those that have it inside their bodies. Was an incredibly growing, enriching experience. And yes, it's hard. It's hard to get to know and care about people and lose them, but what if I had never got to know them at all? So many of them just, you know, my life has so much more value because of that experience. And so, you know, I tell people, don't shy away. So, someone asked me this weekend, someone who knows me very well, she says, what motivated you to work with people with AIDS? And I said, well, I guess ideally, if I were going to choose a job, I'd want a job where I was doing something, utilizing all the things that I've learned as an activist, as an organizer, since I was 16 years old, and I'm 40 now, so that's some number of years, being involved in civil rights and anti-Vietnam War work, which led me to becoming involved as a feminist and a Democratic Party worker and so on. To be able to take those things, and particularly what I learned through being involved in the National Organization for Women, now is an incredible training ground. At least it was during the time that I was active in that organization, during the fight for the Equal Rights Amendment and during the fight for abortion rights, which is an issue that's still very near and dear to my heart because it's one that's in jeopardy. The anti-choice people are gearing up to have a major event during the same time of the economic summit, just as so many of us are with other issues, and it kind of puts you in a bind. You don't know which thing you need to be there for the most. And anyway, I wanted to utilize and be appreciated for the talents that I have in that area. And I also wanted a job where I could be out. And one of the few places that that's available is in the aid service providers. People, because it was the gay community that started those organizations for the most part. And so I was able to be accepted as a lesbian. And that's real important to me. I don't want to have to hide behind anything.
And in my background, being a background person in radio, making sure that things work, not being on the air in a commercial radio station made it a little bit easier to come out. And because a lot of people, especially in pop radio, for the most part, are much more open to people of difference, you know, musicians and things like mm-hmm. that. So when I came out, it was basically here in Houston working at a major market radio station. There really wasn't very many problems. And at that time, the radio station I worked for was owned by ABC, American Broadcasting Company. And they had an informal policy of non-discrimination. And I never really experienced it. But I also channeled a lot of my energy back into the community and didn't concentrate totally on my career. And but it never really backfired on me until about a year ago when I was working for a station owned by another company. It just got to me thinking that, you know, what am I doing here when there are so many more important things going on in our community? I mean, losing the friends and the people so dear to me that I very much wanted to work in the community. And I tried very desperately to get a job either in the community or community-related type thing. And finally, I worked on my own trying to do some things, and it didn't quite work out that well. I mean, the experience was very, very much worthwhile for me. So I had to go back and earn a living in another company.
And that's why sometimes you're not with me on Tuesday, and Ray Hill has to come in and put on his Jack suit.
And I'm sure Ray Hill doesn't mind doing that because
he does a great job too.
He loves doing that. And yes, it does take me away from Houston a lot, which I've grown to love. I mean, I've been here for 8.5 years and I've been very lucky to be able to travel around the country to major cities, and I'm very much a city person. And seeing the way some of the other communities are set up and things like that. And I still like being in Houston, and I know Houston is not as advanced as like San Francisco or New York is in some ways. But and we're in the trenches here. I mean, we're really fighting
the avant-garde, Jack.
I really consider it in the trenches. I mean, we've got a long way to go here to do things, and here in Houston, you can make a difference if you and partly that's the problem, because if you start working one organization and other organizations really interested in your talents or what you can do or what you can contribute, and it's really easy to get burnout here. It's really easy for that to happen. And there aren't enough people involved in the community. And that's one of the reasons why we do this show, is we're trying to attract more people to get involved.
Had you been active at all other cities?
No, I wasn't at all. And in fact, I even voted Republican sometimes. I mean,
Jack.
I was brought up in definitely a Republican family. And it's like, it was a middle class family, but it's like there was really no want for anything. And until I realized I was gay. And
then you knew what you wanted.
And, yes, knew what I wanted, but also knew that, you know, there was some people that didn't quite have it as well as I did, and had to struggle and had to, you know, have help in making things a little bit better for their lives. And living in a city, you get to see that more than you do sometimes living in smaller towns.
Were you from a small town?
Definitely a small town. There was 42 people in my high school graduation class. So we were very, you know, it was a very small, cliquish town. And I would never want to see anybody have to grow up in that type of situation where you had to fit in. I mean, I was sort of a rebel there, but being a rebel there was a lot less.
It didn't take much,
right, exactly. And didn't realize, you know, why I was doing that then. But now I realize that, you know, you don't have to always follow what everybody else does. And society sort of makes it a little bit difficult for you to do that, to be able to choose your own paths in life. And, you know, being gay is choosing a different path in life, definitely. I mean, it certainly isn't easy being a gay or lesbian person.
Ivy Young at the Texas Lesbian Conference did a little routine about you're standing in the cafeteria line, and you give them your plate, and they put a dose of sexism on there, and then you could move along, they put a dollop of racism, and then you go, well, excuse me, could I please have some homophobia for dessert? there are choices made. When did you realize that you were gay?
Long time ago. I mean, I always knew I was gay. But didn't have the opportunity to know that there were other gay people out there. I didn't know of any role models. Growing up in a small town, you don't have that opportunity. You don't see it in the paper. You don't hear it on the radio or TV.
You knew that your affectional preference and your sexual interest when you came of an age where that was there were directed towards other men. But did you...
I didn't know
when
how
did
to...
you know the word even?
I guess I heard those words a little bit in reading like Time Magazine and Newsweek and stuff like that. And what's really interesting is in my school, a lot of those pages were torn out. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Or anything.
Have you had a chance to go back to a reunion yet?
Yes, I did. actually, I've been to a couple of them.
Do you think they were torn out because they wanted to suppress that, or because there were other people who were interested?
I definitely knew that was torn out because it was the way the school was run.
Ah.
And anything, not just if it had to do with gay issues, but if it had to do with any type of radical thinking, those pages were torn out. But luckily, we had a subscription at home, and that's where I first realized that there were, you know, but
that's
of course,
how you knew the pages were torn out.
And of course, you know, the pictures that they usually showed or stories were very, you know, the radical gay or lesbian people in New York City and things like that, but really didn't have to do that. And so I buried a lot of my energy into work at that time, into career and things like that. And
where did you go to college?
Syracuse University. And I knew there was a gay group there, but somehow it just wasn't my time then. It just wasn't my time to get involved and do things like that. So I sort of made up for it, I think.
So when did you actually have your first... you know, encounter.
It happened before I moved to Houston, a short time before I moved to Houston in South Carolina. And it was a real sort of different experience. Of course it was, but, you know, it was like, it took me, it was different.
You felt ready for it at the time?
I don't know if I was quite ready for it. I really don't. Yeah.
Is it a cherished memory?
Not really.
Not really.
No.
But it kind of accomplished something.
Yes.
You kind of have to get that out of the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I always say that we're always thankful for that first person.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how it turned out, or, you know, whether it was a one-night stand or whether it was a relationship or whatever, because, you know, then it accomplishes that mission, and it's an important thing for us to be able to do. It's nice if it can be nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, Deborah, you were married. You have children.
Yes, and my older son just turned 18, the 27th of May, and I'm incredibly proud of him and my other son, who's now 13. I actually had sexual experiences as a teenager with other girls, and I don't know why, but we thought it was pretending.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun. I had one girlfriend in particular whose mother was a widow, and she dated. And we're talking Lubbock, Texas here. And I would go over and spend the night. And I'm not sure exactly how all this started, but I really enjoyed going over there and spending the night. And we knew that we should keep it secret, that we shouldn't let other people know we were doing what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we were well aware of that there was something to that. And there were a number of other girls throughout my teen years. And then we moved from Lubbock, and I didn't know anybody. So I kind of didn't have anything going on for a long time, not till after high school. And then I realized that there were men around, and as I like to say it, men are so easy. There were so many of them around. I was a hippie girl running around the Montrose, doing go-go dancing. Yes, you heard it here. And I do appreciate men sexually, and had many experiences, and eventually met someone and married. I did have a couple of encounters with women during that time, but once I married, I very much believe in monogamy, was married for 12 years. Unfortunately, some of the problems with the marriage led me to want to leave the marriage, and I did begin having a relationship with another woman after, in my mind, I had already decided that the marriage was over.
Mm-hmm.
And that I was not going to continue living a lie. I had always been aware of my attraction to women, but didn't think that it was right to act upon them under the circumstances. And I do have these two wonderful, very special children who have lived with their dad because I can't afford to. I don't make as much money as a woman. But they're doing real good, and I don't have any regrets about that. I spent a time of my life as a homemaker in Spring Branch, and it was in that environment that I actually I owe it to Phil Donahue. What can I say? I was watching television. I heard him talking about this thing called the ERA. I heard rumors that there was going to be a major conference in the city of Houston, a international conference for women. And I found out that I wasn't the only one that thought that women should have certain rights, just like men should have certain rights, and that abortion should be legal. And abortion issue is another big issue, because during the time of my coming of age, it was not legal. And I did have to see a number of friends through illegal abortions, and I never want to see that happen again. So that's an important issue for me. As I came out and as a married person, decided I had to leave my marriage and discover myself and being comfortable. It was easy for me because I was already a feminist. I was already involved with NOW. I've attended the women's group at the Unitarian Church for over 10 years now, and that group is a mixed group with both lesbian and non-lesbian women in it. But there was always a kind of understanding and acceptance, because it is a feminist group. That's the way it should be. So it was real comfortable for me to come out and mm-hmm. to not freak and say, oh my gosh, I'm a lesbian. I mean, it was more, I do this little joke where I bump my head and I go, I could have had a woman. I just didn't know that it was possible, you know, that there were relationships and all of that. So that was part of my coming out. I remember during Pride Week several years ago, Rita Mae Brown was here and spoke, mm-hmm. and she talked about that second adolescence some of us go through.
Absolutely.
If we come out at a later age, mm-hmm. and she said like 33, and I happened to be 33 when I came out, so I said, how does she know? Rita Mae.
Well, I don't really regret that I was in my mid-20s before I came out, but it would have been a lot nicer to be able to have the opportunity to know this beforehand. And I think that's one of the reasons why I do the radio show. This is an opportunity for younger people to find out about the show or just stumble upon it or something like that. I wish there was a radio show when I was growing up that at least I would know some of these things at the time. And I think that's real important.
Sometimes the late night talk shows would have things where people would talk, but mm-hmm. It was never presented in a positive way, particularly. I mean, every now and then, but very rarely. I was an avid reader, and it was through the fact that I would read stuff that gave me the information. I realized after high school that I had quite a reputation because I was so knowledgeable, and people assumed that it was from experience, and it wasn't. It was because I was well-read. If only I had earned it.
It's not to say that if you come out, then everything is wonderful. It's like you pass through this thing, and coming out is many times a gradual process.
And it's not to say that everything's horrible either.
No, absolutely not. There are tough times. I mean, we're going through a very tough time now with AIDS. We're going through a tough time with the violence and
but
stuff.
There's never been a time when it wasn't a tough time. The Holocaust, homosexuals were victims of the Holocaust. There has at different times been prosecutions or persecutions of persons who were homosexual. And then in this country, when we look back at 20 years, what was happening, the bar raids and the people's names being published in the paper, part of the Texas Lesbian Conference, Joan Nessel, who is director of the Lesbian History Archives, talked about reading from people's diaries and personal letters, some of the things that they went through coming out and realizing their gay and lesbian identity, and what an underground, dark, secret life it was. Somebody described it as, oh my gosh, I'm gay. It means I have to spend the rest of my life in bars without windows.
Well, there was also a little speech giving in the AIDS show, which was put on by Theater Rhinoceros in San Francisco, which is a resident gay lesbian theater group out there. And it was a documentary done on PBS, American Playhouse. Very, very wonderful piece. And this elderly gentleman talked about, you know, the lives of people, how they went through the tough times, that people's lives were basically just ruined because names would be published and they would lose their job and they would be sort of blackmailed from things. I mean, the 50s.
Kind of like what outing is now, but then it was done through other means.
Yeah.
Ivy Young said an interesting thing about outing, which I shared last week. She said it is actually unethical. It is against the very fabric of what our movement is about.
That's true. I do, you know, I have mixed feelings about outing, but I do agree with that statement.
Yeah. Yeah. What things have you been involved in as an activist?
Well, very much this show is very important to me. I've also been involved in the Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus. And I've been involved.
If I'm not mistaken, you were awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award last year.
I was, and I'm real proud of that. And I've also been involved in Pride Week since 1983 in some form or the other, either on the inside or the outside of the group, but always promoting it because it's very important to be able to show your pride and to be able to know that there's lots of other people around.
Did you do parade coverage every year since you...
Not since 83. Yeah, we've done parade coverage. We've done live. I think this will be the fourth or fifth year. I'm not really sure. There was one year we didn't do it, but most of the times we have. And so Pride Week is real important. I'm also involved in, of course, you know, the Montrose Activity Center, which is the past couple years, which is an organization that is hoping to build a home for the community, a center that we can be able to network and share ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other organizations on the peripheral.
You're extensively involved in putting together the Montrose Activity Center newsletter. Is your title editor?
Yes, it is. It's editor, I guess. And Deborah, what do you do?
I'm the copy dyke for the Montrose Activity Center. Well, I have been involved in a number of organizations. As I mentioned, the National Organization for Women being one of the primary ones. And I've been on the board of the Montrose Counseling Center, and have been involved in, this is my third year being on the board of Montrose Activity Center. And it's one of, I kind of feel like all the other things have led into that area, because I have been doing all of this for so long that I really feel the need to focus. And through that one place, I have access to everything else and can kind of put my precious time and energy where it is going to do the most good or be the most valued. Because after all these many years as an activist, I do get pretty tired, and I still have a lot of I do activism that is around feminist issues and not just gay, lesbian. And of course, I'm really excited to have become part of Waldenstein. One of the best things that I've liked about it is our growing friendship. It's nice to find a kindred spirit and to be able to have time with them. And you and I have a lot of the same kinds of feelings and insights into things, and so that's something I value very much.
You know, it's real interesting, but major radio and TV stations pay incredible amount of money to get a news anchor team that work well together and things like that, and it just sort of happened with us. And and well, I think sort of it's part of the reason is because we're sort of battling the same battles and things like that, and hoping for the having the same dreams and a lot of things, and knowing that hopefully the show is doing some good for people out there listening. It's certainly doing some good for me.
Last week after the show, I got a call, and it was just a young man who said, thank you. And that just meant so much to me. That, you know, made me feel like, well, that show did reach someone. And we always appreciate the people that support us during marathon, the people that come and volunteer and answer the phones and make that happen. And we really appreciate people who pledge their support and pay their pledges. But we really like to hear from folks too, and any ideas that they have or anything that they'd like to be on the show, any comments or questions that they have, they can always write us, care of the station, 419 Lovett Boulevard. The zip is 77006. It's not just a zip code, it's a lifestyle.
And more than likely the show is probably going to be moved to another time slot. I mean, we don't have that officially, but we know how things happen at the station here. You sort of hear rumors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we don't know when and where that's going to be. Probably the show is going to be moved back to an hour, but we'll let you know as soon as we find out.
Well, I had some questions I wanted to ask you, Jack, since this is my opportunity. And it's sometimes hard to play like I don't know you, you know, at all, and that if I was just asking this question as if I didn't know you, because a lot of things I do feel like I know about you, but I always learn stuff, and I think that's really neat too. What do you feel like is the most significant contribution you've made to the gay and lesbian community? Would it be Waldenstein?
I think Waldenstein is the most important thing, because it's get a chance to talk to people. For somebody who has no connection in the community, I think it's real important that they may find this connection, and if we can be a positive force in their life to let them know, and also informational source, that there are options in life.
Any regrets?
Any regrets? There's a lot of things I wish this radio show can do that I just can't physically do because we don't have enough time. That we're both of us are involved in other things that we can't just totally concentrate on this.
Like
show.
Having regular jobs that we
right.
have to earn some money to where we can live. Do you have what is your major goal as a gay man?
To make it easier for somebody else to come out and be who they are.
I think you do that.
And what about you, Deborah?
I want to see our community learn to be kinder to one another. And I, too, want to see people be able to be open and out and visible. That is just the most crucial thing. Arnold says in Torch Song, the love and the respect. If someone can't give us that, they have no room in our lives. And that's what I think it's about. And we need to love and respect each other.
This has turned out to be a real special radio show for me. And thank you, Deborah, for being here. I want to thank Tori and her guest to talk about Sweet Charity, which is coming up next, a week from Sunday.
It's the June 10th. Sunday, June 10th at 6 p.m.
And Pride Week is coming up, so get out and celebrate.
Yeah, and thank you for listening.
And that's another edition of The Waldenstein Show, the world's longest and continuous running gay and lesbian radio show. The Collective will be back next Tuesday at 9 p.m. For further information on what is going on in the community, call the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard at 529-3211. And at 90.1 on your FM dial, you are listening to Pacifica's community-sponsored KPFT Houston.
When we were born, they tried to cover our eyes. Then they tried to tell us all what to see. We are discovering that did not work, for we were born to be free. It's a gay spirit singing in our hearts, leading us through these troubled times. Gay spirit moving round this land, calling us to a